From Montreal, Quebec, this is the Bard Brawl.
Welcome, Bard Brawlers, to a special Bard Brawl podcast, the Speeches Edition. Joining me is only one person tonight. It's a lonely table of two. Although Tara's sitting in the back.
Well, you haven't invited me to join.
All right, well, she hasn't been invited to the table. She's in the back giving us election updates of the Quebec provincial election, which everybody in the province is waiting on bated breath for.
Wish we were doing Coriolanus today.
Yeah, Coriolanus, we could see some real politics play out. Although, Merchant of Venice, can we make a play for Merchant of Venice being in any way similar to Quebec politics? There is a lot of... The idea of justice, the idea of mercy.
Anti-Semitism.
Or, yes.
You know, just racism, more generally.
Straight up racism, yes. So we're going to look at some of the speeches from aforesaid Merchant of Venice. By the way, Eric Jean, how are you tonight?
I'm very good.
Yeah.
We've got new IPA.
Boreal has come out with an IPA, which I'm very excited about because it is one of my favorite ales. Although it's actually, isn't it technically a lager? No, it is an ale. IPA. Oh, that makes sense. So for the first speech we're going to look at one from Act 1. Where are we situating, where is the first speech come from, Mr. Eric Jean?
The first speech, sorry, important to wine pouring duty,
yeah.
The first speech from Act 1, Scene 1, and it comes right, not too far from the beginning. Basically, Antonio comes out and he's very sad and depressed sounding, and his buddy Bisanio comes around to try to hit him up for money, but right now he's hanging out with a couple of other guys. One of Bisanio's friends, Graziano, who's he likes to party, let's say. Good way to put it, maybe.
This, we talked about this. If you want to listen to the entire play, you can do so at barbrawl.com, or you can download them all on iTunes. Just search for Bard Brawl, you'll find it. We have recorded all five acts with discussion.
Mm-hmm.
You can also read any of expanded discussion notes on Bard Brawl. This speech is by Graziano. It's written by Benny Hedley, who moved to Germany.
Yeah, we're going to miss him for 9 months.
Yeah. So let's listen to the speech.
I hold the world, but as the world, Graziano. A stage where every man must play a part, and mine a sad one.
Let me play the fool. With mirth and laughter let old wrinkles come, and let my liver rather heat with wine, that my heart cool with mortifying groans. Why should a man whose blood is warm within sit like his grandsire cut in alabaster, sleep when he wakes, and creep into the jaundice by being peevish? I tell thee what, Antonio? I love thee. And it is my love that speaks. There are a sort of men whose visages do cream and mantle like a standing pond, and do a willful stillness entertain, with purpose to be dressed in an opinion of wisdom, gravity, profound conceit, as who should say, I am Sir Oracle, and when I ope my lips, let no dog bark. O my Antonio, I do know of these, that therefore only are reputed wise, for saying nothing, when, I am very sure, if they should speak, would almost damn those ears, which, hearing them, would call their brothers fools. I'll tell thee more of this another time, but fish not with this melancholy bait, for this fool gudgeon, this opinion. Come, good Lorenzo, fare you well a while. I'll end my exhortation after dinner.
So one thing about this play is the secondary characters, as in most Shakespeare plays, are excellent. Graziano,
yeah,
being one of them. He sort of has these great lines where he sort of comments on this strange relationship between Bisanio and Antonio. He's also the one who eggs on Shylock later in the play. He's very interesting.
He's interesting because he's a kind of a Bisanio clone. He basically follows him around and copies whatever he does, but he's also like a reflection of Antonio. As Antonio and Graziano are Bisanio's two best friends, and one is sort of party all the time and the other one is all serious and sad. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, he's a good character. Then we move on. Are we still in Act 1 for the next speech?
I think so, yes.
We have to introduce Shylock, mm-hmm. because Shylock is the money roll for the actors out there. You want to be Shylock. Pacino was him in the movie. We talked about that a lot. Mm-hmm. I've seen this play a couple of times. It's a good role. It's the trickiest role to dissect. It's the quote-unquote anti-Semitic character, but maybe not. So tell me about this first speech we're going to hear. I think also read by Benny, actually, because he was reading both Shylock and Graziano.
Yeah, which is kind of funny. But yeah, this speech is Antonio doesn't have any money because all of his ships are out at sea. But he does say, okay, you know what, Bassanio, let's go out and see if I can borrow some money for you. And they decide ultimately to go see Shylock and agree to borrow money with interest, which is not something that Antonio generally does. And the speech we hear is, Shylock's justification for usury, the way that he does business, and sort of a hint at how Antonio disagrees with that and why.
And you are reading Antonio.
Love me, my Antonio.
Always Eric Jean as Antonio and Benny Hedley as Shylock. Let's listen.
When Jacob grazed his uncle Laban's sheep, this Jacob from our holy Abraham was, as his wise mother wrought on his behalf, the third possessor. Aye, he was the third.
And what of him? Did he take interest?
No, not take interest. Not, as you would say, directly interest. Mark that Jacob did. When Laban and himself were compromised that all the eanlings which were staked and pied should fall as Jacob's hire, the ewes, being rank, in the end of autumn turned to the rams, and when the work of generation was between those holy breeders in the act, the skillful shepherd peeled me certain wands, and, in the doing of the deed of kind, he stuck them up before the fulsome ewes, who then conceiving did in eaning time fall party-colored lambs, and those were Jacob's. This was a way to thrive, and he was blessed. And thrift is blessing, if men steal it not.
This was a venture, sir, that Jacob served for, a thing not in his power to bring to pass, but swayed and fashioned by the hand of heaven. Was this inserted to make interest good, or is your gold and silver ewes and rams?
I cannot tell, and make it breed as fast. But note me, senor.
So one of the things that I mentioned in one of the podcasts was how The Merchant of Venice is such an interesting title. At face value, you get that it's Antonio. He's the Merchant of Venice. But Shylock is also a merchant. And this speech, what I like about it is that it's the two ideas of merchant.
Yeah, it's like business philosophies clashing in a sense.
Yeah, and commerce comes up again and again in this play. We don't hear any speeches. I don't think there was any with Portia, but she also sort of gets
she's traded,
lumped into the commodity.
She's part of the treasure that the hero wins. She's actually the Graziano at some point says, "We are the Jasons who have won the golden fleece," and the golden fleece is Portia. Like she's an object of value.
And she bemoans. There's one part where she bemoans the fact that it's a lottery for her. She doesn't have any sort of choice.
Control.
She doesn't have control. She just has these people pick these three caskets. And is that a segue into our next speech?
Segue into a later speech.
Yeah, there is a later speech that will come up.
But the next one is probably the most famous speech
right.
from this play. Yeah.
So for those X-Men fans out there, I watched the X-Men cartoon in the 90s. I did.
Yes.
I think most people about my age know this. The character Beast quoted this. This is the if you want to make the case for this play being somewhat anti-Semitic, you can, but you have to address this speech. This is the most famous speech that Shylock delivers, and he's delivering it to
one of Antonio's friends, basically, and he's just telling him, like, you'd get revenge on me, you'd mistreat me, what am I going to do if you've wronged me? I'm going to do the exact same
thing.
Yeah,
he's delivering it to Solario or Selenio or...
One of the SKs.
I think they're both there.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because he's not delivering this to the other merchant. He's delivering it to one of his crony... These loser cronies that just kind of run around and do whatever Antonio says. And I find that interesting that it's not part of the court speech.
Yeah. Well, it's also the most significant... obvious break from the source material. Because the stuff it's based on, the Jewish character is a caricature. There's no clear justification for why he's upset. He just is because he's evil and he's Jewish. That's the suggestion. But in this play, like, Shakespeare puts a lot of effort into giving him a really solid, making him a really relatable character. And you can say, yeah, I don't have any problems at all siding with him and saying, like, yeah, I kind of want him to get back at those guys for being jerks to him for so long.
You can't listen to the speech and just think, I hate that guy. Because you see, and it comes up before, there was another speech, I don't think we have, where he talks about Antonio spitting on him in the street and calling him dog, but now you want my money. And it's a very telling, I wasn't alive at 15, what was this? Early 1600s?
Yeah, something like that.
But I can't imagine anyone watching this and just being like, ah, he's evil. Like, it's a lot more complicated, which is what makes it great.
Right? Yeah.
Here is, once again, Benny Hedley reading the most famous speech, and it is Shylock's.
I am sure if he forfeit, thou will not take his flesh. What's that good for?
Debate fish withal. If it will feed nothing else, it will feed my revenge. He hath disgraced me and hindered me 500,000, laughed at my losses, mocked at my gains, scorned my nation, thwarted my bargains, cooled my friends, heated mine enemies. And what's his reason? I am a Jew. Hath not a Jew eyes? Hath not a Jew hands, organs, dimensions, senses, affections, passions? Fed with the same food, hurt with the same weapons, subject to the same diseases, healed by the same means, warmed and cooled by the same winter and summer, as a Christian is? If you prick us, do we not bleed? If you tickle us, do we not laugh? If you poison us, do we not die? And if you wrong us, shall we not revenge? If we are like you in the rest, we will resemble you in that. If a Jew wrong a Christian, what is his humility? Revenge. If a Christian wrong a Jew, what should his sufferance be by a Christian example? Why, revenge. The villainy you teach me, I will execute, and it shall go hard, but I will better the instruction.
Enter a servant. The other thing is that he talks about revenge. Revenge, like, wrong us, shall we not have revenge? And there's a play called Shylock, I mentioned this in the original podcast, about a Jewish actor who played this role sometime in the... After the Elizabethan age, and was outcast by his community for playing this role, and also outcast by mainstream society because he was Jewish. And it's a great scene. By the way, I started watching that movie Anonymous.
Ouch.
Yeah, I didn't finish it, but apparently it's all made up. Shakespeare wasn't real.
Yeah.
Or he was, but he didn't write anything. This aristocrat wrote it. Because
that complicated rationale for what really happened seems so much more plausible than there was a guy and he wrote these plays.
Yeah, or a team of people. Like, it's an entertaining movie just because you get to see a lot of Shakespeare speeches, and I always kind of get into that. But, yes. I know the theory. So next time someone who may be listening to this feels the need to come up to me on the street and give me a little quasi 5-cent history lesson on who really wrote all this stuff. I don't care. If he didn't write it, fine. I don't care.
I like the speeches.
Yes. So, the moving...
The dog.
Pardon?
And the bits with the dog.
Yeah, and the bits with the dog. So that... That sets this scene. Now, are we into Act 4 yet?
No, we're still in Act 3.
Right.
We actually are sort of jumping back and forth between Venice and Belmont. And
sure, right.
Bassanio now is... we didn't go to their speeches because they're... Bassanio gives us more, probably the most interesting version of the same thing when he's picking from the three caskets.
There, by there, he's referring to the two other suitors that choose from the caskets, and then Bassanio kind of sums it up.
Yeah, so in Act Two, we see the Prince of Morocco and Aragon choose the wrong box.
By the way, you should listen to the original Barbrawl podcast, because Andre Simino reads both Morocco and Aragon, and they're very funny.
Yeah, and I accidentally call him Aragorn.
Yeah. It's okay. You know, we can understand.
We're just crossing our literary. Yeah.
We always want to go to Aragorn's wisdom. So this is, me. Yes. I volunteered to read Bassanio. I have a tendency to really enjoy reading the more douchier characters. And why are we choosing this speech?
Well, we have to sort of put in a speech from when the whole casket choosing. That's what the Portia plot sort of hinges on. And this really addresses, I mean, it talks about, again, talks about weight, about value, about worth. And, yeah, and he offers the whole rationale, basically, for why he picks the lead box and why love is the weightiest, measured by the weight.
Yes, and it begins with a song.
It begins
and
with a song.
And you'll hear what I feel about reading it in song right now. Thank you for the music. I'm not singing this. Tell me where is fancy bread, or in the heart, or in the head. How begot, how nourished, reply, reply, it is engendered in the eyes, with gazing fed and fancy dies, in the cradle where it lies. Let us all ring fancy's knell, I'll begin it, ding dong bell.
Ding dong bell.
Thank you. So, may the outward shows be least themselves, the world is still deceived with ornament and law, what please so tainted and corrupt, but being seasoned with a gracious voice, obscures the show of evil. In religion, what damned error, but some sober brow will bless it and approve it with a text, hiding the grossness of fair ornament. There is no vice so simple, but assume some mark of virtue on this outward parts. How many cowards whose hearts are all as false as stairs of sand, wear yet upon their chins the beards of Hercules and frowning Mars, who inward search it, have livers white as milk, and these assume but valor's excrement to render them redoubted. Look on, beauty, and you shall see 'tis purchased by the weight, which therein works a miracle in nature, making them lightest that wear most of it. So are those crisped, snaky, golden locks which make such wanton gambols with the wind, upon supposed fairness, often known to be the dowry of a second head, the skull that bred them in the sepulchre, thus ornament is but gild shore. To a most dangerous sea, the beauteous scarf veiled an Indian beauty, in a word, the seeming truth which cunning times put on to entrap the wisest. Therefore, thou gaudy gold, heart fool for Midas, I will none of thee. Nor none of thee, thou pale and common drudge, tween man and man, but thou meager lead, which rather threatenest than dost promise aught. Thy paleness moves me more than eloquence, and here choose I. Joy be the consequence. So that at time, I remember when I first saw it, I just thought, oh, that stupid Portia choosing the boxes, the rings, all of this type of thing. And the more I've seen this play, or the more I've read it, the more I kind of enjoy it. And Melissa, one of our readers in the original, brought up a good point about how it's so current. It talks about how girls like are when they see guys. Like there's that scene where she meets she's meeting all these guys, and it's like, oh, he only talks about his horse, and
yeah,
he only talks about his money. He always wants to drop. Tara, what has been your experience with men? Has it been nothing but princes showing up on horseback, or has it been kind of like sifting through a used clothing bin that six other people have been through already?
The latter.
Yeah. It's a good, when you watch this play, and I said in the podcast, and I watched it with a couple of girls once when I was living in Vancouver, and they were so into that because the girl characters are really great. Yeah. And we'll see another speech from them coming up.
It's true of a lot of the comedies. The girl characters tend to, on the whole, be much better or interesting and compelling than the guys.
Which is why I kind
of... Especially Elizabeth Taylor.
As...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, as in Taming of the Shrew?
Well, when we cover that play, we'll have a lot to say about what we think about that play. Yeah.
But yeah, the girl characters in this play, as in other plays, that, I think that's why I'm so drawn to Shakespeare, because it's there's so many great characters first, but also so many great female characters. It's not like reading David Mamet, where it's like, if you're a guy, you'll love it. If you're a girl, why bother? So our next speech, we're going into Act 4. Now, I'll recommend... And I'm plugging my own... are we going into Act 4?
Yeah, are we doing the... I guess we'll do the end of Act 3, Scene 4.
Oh, right, the end of Act 3.
Yeah, which, after having picked the boxes, Bassanio gets news that Antonio's in trouble, that he hasn't been able to pay Shylock back, and so Shylock is out for his pound of flesh. And so Portia says, okay, no problem, here's the money that you need, run back, save your friend, and, you know, we'll get married first. Run off, save your friend, and come back, and we'll all have a big party together, and everyone will be happy. And as soon as they leave, she basically says, okay, great, now that they're gone, let's send away for legal advice and dress up as lawyers. And let's go party it up as young men in Venice.
The classic Shakespearean gender switch.
Yeah.
And this is a great speech. I believe Mickey Lavelle is reading Portia in the scene.
Yeah,
I believe you are Nerissa.
I may be Nerissa, yeah.
For and all there may be months. A servant in here at some point.
There may. You'll there recognize may him by this distinct manner.
As I have ever found honest true, so let me find thee still. Take this letter, and use though all the endeavor of a man in speed to Padua. See thou render this into my cousin's hands, Dr. Bellario, and look what notes and garments he doth give thee. Bring them, I pray thee, with imagined speed, unto the Tranicet?
Tranict? I don't know what it is.
Sorry. Unto the Tranict, to common ferry which trades to Venice. Waste no time in words, but get thee gone. I shall be there before thee.
Madam, I go with all convenient speed.
Exit.
Come on, Nerissa. I have work in hand that... you yet know not of. We'll see our husbands before they think of us.
Shall they see us?
They shall, Nerissa, but in such a habit that they shall think we are accomplished with that we lack. I hold thee any wager when we go both accoutred like young men, I'll prove the prettier fellow of the two, and wear my dagger with the braver grace, and speak between the charge of man and boy with a reed voice, and turn two mincing steps into a manly stride, and speak a phrase like a fine bragging youth, and tell quaint lies how honorable ladies sought my love, which I denying, they fell sick and died. I could not do withal. Then I'll repent and wish for all that I had not killed them. And 20 of these puny lies I'll tell, that men shall swear I have discontinued school about a 12-month. I'll have within my mind 1,000 rod tricks of these bragging jacks, which I will practice.
So they've gone, there's a trial. Now, Act 4, I would recommend just listening to the podcast, because we had recorded it in studio with a number of great voices who have fled. Rebecca Salomon, who's in Edmonton, Stephanie Forrester is in Spain, Julia May was reading, and we have a great Shylock. Benny was also great.
Well, yeah.
But we have Amrit Sanger reading this Shylock speech, and we chose this one over another one. Explain.
Well, the other one that we almost picked is probably the second famous speech from Merchant of Venice, which is the Portia's speech about mercy.
Read by me. I was Portia.
Maybe we should include it. Just, you'll have to go back to the original show to hear Daniel's brilliant delivery.
Is that the one for Arrested Development?
I don't know. I'll go with yes, but...
No, Portia de Rossi?
I know.
Oh.
I thought there was a speech that I missed.
I don't know if they did that speech in Arrested Development, but yes, Portia de Rossi is a different Portia than Portia from Merchant of Venice.
I'm learning so much tonight.
Yeah. So the speech we got, which Amrit reads as Shylock...
Yeah, that speech is... it's that moment where Shylock insists on having what he's asking for. They've told him to be merciful. They say, oh, come on, you don't really want this piece of flesh. You're just, you know, egging us on until the last possible moment where you'll, you know, everyone got a good fright and you'll say, okay, I don't really mean it. Give me my money and let me get out of here. But this is the moment where Shylock basically says, no, I'm serious. I want what's mine and nothing else. That's what I want.
The gauntlet is laid. Amrit Sanger.
What judgment shall I dread doing, were it in six parts and every part a ducat? I would not draw them. I would have my bond.
How shalt thou hope for mercy, rendering none?
What judgment shall I dread doing no wrong? You have among you many a purchased slave, which, like your asses and your dogs and mules, you use in abject and in slavish parts because you bought them. Shall I say to you, let them be free, marry them to your hair, to your heirs? Why sweat they under burdens? Let their beds be made as soft as yours, and let their palates be seasoned with such viands? You will answer, the slave are ours. So do I answer you, the pound of flesh, which I demand of him is dearly bought. 'Tis mine and I will have it. If you deny me, fie upon your law. There is no force in the decrees of Venice. I stand for judgment. Answer, shall I have it?
So Act 4 is the one to listen to. I mean, you should listen to the whole play. It's fun. You can play it in your car.
Act 4 won't make much sense without Acts 1 through 3.
That's true. But we did do a good job with that. I was very proud of my team, of our team of actors that read that. Yeah.
It's a little Top Gun moment.
Oh, jeez. Sorry. I do that sometimes.
I guess I'm Goose.
I say that when I do my sports podcast, I always say my.
It's okay.
Like my Liverpool, like as if I have any interest in them. But Act 4 is great. There's the court. The speech that you just heard sets up one of the great dichotomies in the play.
Yeah.
Justice and mercy.
Yeah, that's the whole of Act 4.
And we don't have a speech for that kind of exemplifies it, because you have to see the play or listen to the play to get it. The fact that Antonio, quote unquote, signifies mercy, yet his idea of mercy is very circumspect.
Yeah.
With how he punishes Shylock, basically. And so I'll leave you to listen to the play and make your own decisions. Feel free to leave comments at barbrawl.com. You can also leave them on our Facebook page if you'd like. I think actually you can leave comments on the iTunes site as well.
Well, if not, review it. You can at least review.
Yeah, and criticize.
Give us a bunch of stars.
By the way, very few of the Bar Brawlers are actors. So Amrit is one of the actors.
That's true.
So if you want to criticize a dramatic reading, he's the one.
Yeah, although to be fair to him, he did it cold. He didn't study the speech.
All of the Bar Brawl readings are cold.
Yeah.
We generally come into them cold. We've looked at the plays before. We've read them usually, but nobody has memorized anything. We're just basically reading.
Well, and even in some with our recent Coriolanus speech works, I think Andre had not read the play.
Yeah.
And so he was reading through
or
the
David.
First time. Or David actually,
yeah.
and they were had some meaty parts to...
Both trained actors.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. They have no excuse.
Yeah, they don't have excuse. But yeah, the reading in cold, that's kind of what we do with Bar Brawl.
Yeah, and it isn't about performance, really.
Right. It's about love of the bard. Or whoever.
Accessibility of the
bard. The last one is my favorite. And I love it. I just love it. And we talked about this, and you wrote about it.
Yes.
How Act 5 opens with a scene between Lorenzo and Jessica. Lorenzo, the douchiest of the douches. And Jessica, this phenomenal character.
She's amazing. She's probably the, well, I can't necessarily say the best, but my favorite female character in the whole play.
In this
she's,
play, for
she's
sure.
the smartest. Yeah. She's the most aware. She seems to have a really good grasp of what's going on, and is sort of playing the game, but is and going along with it. But if you read carefully, she's poking and prodding at everything.
And then all of a sudden, her heart breaks.
Yeah.
And this is the. It's read by our good friend Jack D. John D. Jack, as John we call Jack. Him. Who's from Alberta, who reads Lorenzo better than anybody. It was just perfect the way he read him. And then Melissa Myers, who reads one line, but
it's brilliant.
It's just perfect. So we'll listen to John D. Jack and Melissa Myers read this speech.
How sweet the moonlight sleeps upon this bank. Here will we sit and let the sounds of music creep in our ears. Soft stillness and the night become the touches of sweet harmony. Sit, Jessica. Look how the floor of heaven is thick inlaid with patines of bright gold. There's not the smallest orb which thou beholdst, but in this motion like an angel sings, still choiring to the young-eyed cherubims. Such harmony is in immortal souls, but whilst this muddy vesture of decay doth grossly close it in, we cannot hear it.
Enter musicians.
Come ho! And wake Diana with a hymn! With sweetest touches pierce your mistress's ear, and draw her home with music.
I am never merry when I hear sweet music.
The reason is, your spirits are attentive.
And then after that, they sort of wrap everything up.
Yeah.
And I've criticized this because of the ring and blah.
Well, there's actually, before that, you should go and listen to the whole thing from Act 5, because the speech, we cut the speech off a little short because Daniel and I really like that line that Jessica has, that is her last line of the play, actually. She's silenced after this. But if you continue and you can listen to Lorenzo's justification, you hopefully get a good laugh out of it.
Yeah, I wanted to end it there for the dramatic way Lorenzo just like, I'll explain.
Don't worry, you just haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, but she actually has figured everything out.
Exactly.
And the way they shoot it in the Pacino movie is it plays on that. There's actually a final shot of Jessica looking at the ring that she's stolen from Shylock. This is
and the ring that she hasn't actually sold, even though the play tells us that she sold it, or Shylock overhears a rumor that the ring was sold.
Yeah, and this,
which is an interesting take on it, because there's nothing, you have to decide when you're staging it whether or not it's a rumor or if it's true.
Yeah, and this act is all about the ring swaps and Graziano and Bassiano have given the rings to the disguised Portia and Nerissa, and it's this big, like, give and take. They kind of dangle them in front of their faces, and it's classic girl play. Always want to be ahead of us guys, Tara Rockwell.
We don't want. We are.
This is Tara's first experience with the bar brawl, and so we welcome her to join us. But that is The Merchant of Venice. Those are the speeches. We will be back next week with Coriolanus, Act 4.
Yes.
Coriolanus could not last long enough
for
me.
I know.
Every time when we did Act 3, feel free to go and listen to Act 3.
Yeah.
But when we did Act 3, I kind of had that, oh no, there's only two left.
But Act 4 is, I keep saying it after, Act 2 is amazing. Act 3, Act 4, they're...
We kind of hit it pretty hard with the first two plays. We did Merchant of Venice, Coriolanus, two of both of our favorites. So in the, I think for the third and fourth, actually, I know which play we're going to do third.
Yeah.
And it is not one of my favorites. No. So,
but
it'll be interesting it'll be fun.
Yes.
So I thank you for joining us. Thank you, Eric Jean, for coming here.
My pleasure.
Eric, or Tara, how is the Quebec elections going?
PQ ahead. Lives closely behind.
Oh, interesting.
CAC in third. It's going to be a tight minority so far.
The CAC, by the
government, is going to fold very quick and will be governed by a coalition of Liberals and CAC. That's the prediction.
Liberals and CAC.
Not
everyone who's not from Quebec is laughing because they think we're making fun of this political party, but they're actually called the CAC.
Yeah.
The
Coalition Avenir Québec.
Right. Memo to French speakers who are listening to this podcast. When you're translating, be very careful about how something sounds. So I welcome you to go to barbrawl.com, leave a comment, download or subscribe to the podcast, and go on Facebook and like us.
Yeah.
I put
and
likes in quotes.
Comments. We want comments.
Comments, criticisms, all welcome. Thank you. Have a good night.
Take care.
Sonnet number 5. Those hours that with gentle work did frame, the lovely gaze where every eye doth dwell, will play the tyrants to the very same, and that unfair which fairly doth excel. For never resting time leads summer on to heedless winter, and confounds him there. Sap checked with frost, and lusty leaves quite gone, beauty o'er snowed, and bareness everywhere. Then were not summer's distillation left, a liquid prisoner pent in walls of glass, beauty's effect with beauty were bereft. Nor it, nor no remembrance what it was, but flowers distilled, though they with winter met, lease but their show, their substance still leaves sweet.